Hey, welcome back everyone to the channel. Campfire Tales, beautiful people. And we are here for part two, the sequel to the werewolf slash dogman Maple Street adventure. I hope you enjoyed the first part because I thought it was fantastic. And I said, we have to have a part two. Like, this is a cliffhanger. Can't leave me hanging. So we got it. And what I have for lunch today is a frozen burrito. It's delicious, cheap, and, well, not nutritious. But since YouTube doesn't want to recognize me in their algorithm after 7 freaking years, I'm still a poor boy, so cheers. It does the trick. Put a little hot sauce and some sour cream on here and you'll be doing good. Let's get to the story. They woke me by snapping a rubber band against my wrist. Not a metaphor, an actual rubber band. Sharp little sting. A woman's face floated into focus upside down, her hair stuffed in a paper cap. Her mask hid most of her expression, but her eyes were tired the way everybody's were that night.
"Evan," she said, like reading off a chart. "You're at the Division Field Facility. You were exposed. We're gonna monitor you."
My mouth was cotton. I tried to say, "Where's Cole?" And it came out as air.
"Your friend's being evaluated too," she said. "Don't move."
I was strapped to a narrow bed. White belt across my chest. White belts across my thighs and shins. Plastic cuffs on my wrists and ankles, with slotted buckles that could tighten but not loosen. The mattress was covered in something wipeable that squeaked when I breathed. Above me, the ceiling tiles had pinholes like sand, one of them stained brown in the corner. The light was a flat panel that hummed. I turned my head a little to the right. The room had a drain in the floor and a door with no handle on my side. A camera in a smoked dome watched from the corner. On the wall closest to my head, there was a laminated sign taped up. It said, "Subject Handling, Yellow, Pre-Conversion. Avoid bright light and loud noises. Restrain during transport. Speak calmly. Short instructions. Maintain distance if aggression increases." My tongue felt like a dry sponge. Someone put a straw to my lips. The water tasted like inside of a hose. I sipped and it hurt going down. "How long?" I croaked. Since the roof.
2 hours, the nurse said. "You slept most of it off."
She pressed 2 fingers to my wrist and counted.
"Pulse high. That's expected."
"What is this place?" I asked.
"A shell warehouse,"
a different voice said, male, closer to my left. I turned and saw him through a window. A rectangular pane that took up half the wall, with thick glass and a wire mesh inside it. He wore the same dark gear as the guys on my street. No helmet indoors, hair too short to get a comb through. Triangle through circle badge on his chest. We refit them quick when an event pops. South loading docks intake, east wing is observation. It's all temporary. He looked 30, maybe, but his eyes looked older than that. "I want to see my friend," I said. It came out croaky and younger than I meant.
"You will,"
he said, flipping his tablet like he was bored. "After we finish your baseline."
I need to see him now, I said. He smiled with only his mouth.
That's not how this works.
The nurse tightened one of my straps a click. Not enough to hurt, just enough to remind me it was there. Then she picked up a little metal hammer and tapped the inside of my elbow, watching the twitch. Any head pain? She asked. Jaw, back, light sensitivity? No, I said automatically. I'm fine.
You were coughing on the roof, the man said without looking up. Scanner shows you as yellow. We'll see if it holds.
What does yellow mean? I asked.
Not red, he said.
He finally looked up.
Don't make me explain obvious things.
The nurse stuck a needle into the crook of my arm. I flinched. She tied another rubber band to my wrist.
What's that for? I asked.
In case we lose you in transport, she said. It's a color check.
Lose me?
Her eyes flicked to the man. He shook his head barely. She took the needle out and tapped a square of gauze over the puncture.
If you're calm, the man said, I'll show you your friend. But you do exactly what I say. No sudden movements, no shouting. Understand?
Yes, I said. He spoke into the air. A lock thunked. The door without a handle clicked and swung inward. He stepped back to give the camera a good angle on me and jerked his chin.
Sit up slow.
I sat up. The belts gave, then tightened where they could. The nurse undid the chest strap. She left the wrist cuffs on, turned them so the smooth sides were forward. The plastic had tiny serrations where it bit into itself. My skin felt abraded under it. Two other people stood in the hall outside in matching dark uniforms. One had a clear shield clipped to his belt. The other carried a canister with a fat nozzle and a condensation line creeping down its side. The label read M93 Cryotherm and had a frost flake symbol.
Walk with me, the man said.
My legs wobbled when the belts came off. He didn't offer an arm. I shuffled in bare feet. The floor was painted concrete. It was cool and a little gritty, like someone had sand thrown there recently and swept it up badly. We passed rooms. Some doors had windows like mine. Some didn't. In one, a woman my mom's age laid strapped down like I had been, cheeks streaked with tears, staring up at the ceiling. In another, two guys in lab coats adjusted a rack of vials under a hood with a glass front. The vials pinged as they touched. A syringe whooped once. Just a single bleat. The strip lights flickered and kept humming. We came to a bigger window and he stopped. He pointed without stepping aside. Cole was on the other side of the glass. He was sitting on a metal chair in a white room like mine, but bigger. Hands cuffed at his sides, ankles strapped to the chair legs. There was a table bolted to the floor with nothing on it. A pair of bright lights angled down from the ceiling. A drain in the floor under his feet. A red line painted 2 feet out from his chair. He looked worse. His skin was the color of paper from the school printer tray. Sweat ran down his temples and into his hair. His eyes were glassy and red-streaked, pupils wider than they should even be under bright lights. Under his jaw, along the edge of his throat, there was swelling that I hadn't seen before. His nails were longer, dull gray. He looked up and saw me and smiled with that little flicker of his older self.
Hey! He said.
I couldn't hear it through the glass, but I saw the shape of the word on the way his lips barely moved. someone inside the room stood in the corner out of my line of sight and spoke. Cole's eyes shifted that way. The corner of his mouth twitched. He nodded once. "What are you doing to him?" I asked.
"Evaluating," the man said.
He held his tablet so the glass wouldn't reflect it. "Stimulus challenge. We need to see where he is on the curve."
"What curve?"
"Conversion curve," he said, like he was reciting a line from a manual. "What it takes to push him off the fence. If we could nudge him back to baseline, we try. If not..."
He glanced at the tech with the M93. "Containment."
"You said you needed him alive," I said.
"We do. Alive isn't the same as not changed."
On the far wall inside, a speaker crackled. Cole flinched. The man inside asked him something I couldn't hear. Cole nodded again. The man wrote on a clipboard. A second person entered the room with a rolling cart. Metal tray on top. Straps, gauze, capped syringes. The person wore a mask shield and two layers of gloves. They placed a syringe on the tray, uncapped it with a snap, tapping it with a fingernail. A bubble climbed and popped. They threw the cap in a bin.
"What is that?" I asked. "Not a sedative," the man said. "Adrenergic stimulus. If he's stable, he holds the line. If he's tipping, you see it fast."
They weren't calming him. They were pushing him. Cole saw the syringe and looked at me again. It wasn't fear on his face, exactly. It was a lot of things squeezed together until they turned into something small and dangerous. He mouthed "don't" and shook his head once like he could crack the thought out of it.
"Stop," I said.
My voice hit the glass and came back thin. "He's sick. You could wait." The man didn't look at me.
"Begin,"
he said into his throat mic. Inside, the tech stepped over the red line with the tray. Cole's fingers dug into his chair arms until his knuckles went shiny. The tech swabbed his arm. He jerked and then held the skin taut and slid the needle in. Cole's mouth opened in a breath I felt like I could hear even through the glass. The vein bulged under the pressure. The plunger went down. The tech counted the 10 with their lips. I watched for the thing you always see on TV where the person slumps and the beeping evens out and the scene ends. Cole didn't slump. His jaw went slack for a second, then his eyes snapped open wider. He made a sound. It wasn't a scream. It started lower than a scream, like a groan dragged across a rough surface. Then it climbed. His head tipped back against the chair. The tendons in his neck stood out like cords. His fingers scraped the chair arms and left crescents in the metal.
"Vitals?"
the man asked, and the speaker in the ceiling answered in a calm female voice, elevated, irregular. "Oxygen 98, like reading grocery specials." Cole's back arched. The straps over his thighs strained. The woman in the white coat said something into the room mic. The tech reached for the tray like they were gonna dose him again. Cole gulped air like swallowing it hurt. All at once, his jaw clicked. It was a clean, hard sound that carried through the glass in a way his voice hadn't. His shoulders jerked as if someone had put an electric match to it. "Wait," I said, backing a step without meaning to. His jaw clicked again, sharper. The skin down the sides of his throat swelled fast, pale and shiny, then flushed. He made another sound, this one raw. It wasn't words. The mic in the room picked it up and flattened it and fed it back, and it still sounded like a person being peeled inside out.
Hold!
The man beside me said, and I realized he was saying it into the room, not to me. Cole's arms trembled. His biceps bunged. The strap across his right wrist creaked. Then came the thing I won't ever get out of my head. His left hand spasmed. The nail on his index finger lifted slowly from the bed like someone prying up a stuck tile. Not all the way, just enough to break the seal. Blood welled along the cuticle in a thin line. The nail grayed and lengthened in a slow, wrong way. The skin at each knuckle went shiny, then split in hair-fine lines and seeped. That would have been bad enough if I couldn't hear it. But I heard it. I heard the dry, adhesive sound of nail separating, the tiny wet pop-pop of the skin along the knuckles giving way, the soft grind as bones shifted under his wrist, skin like chair legs dragging across a floor. He choked. He tried to curl his hand into a fist and couldn't. The fingers wanted the bend backwards instead, tendons twitching under the skin like hooked wires. His jaw clicked again, then it popped. The lower half went crooked first. It sagged right, then snapped farther left. His tongue pushed forward between teeth that were no longer flush. A thin smear of red slid out with drool. The hinge under his ear bulged and slipped, and then seated in a new wrong place with a soft clack. The woman in the coat said, "Prepare containment," and the tech with the canister at my shoulder lifted it a little. "Don't," I said aloud. "Don't, he's..." He tried to swallow and couldn't. His swallow turned into a gag. He bowed forward against the chest strap, gagging again, and a string of bloody saliva dripped to the floor between his bare feet. His feet. God. The arches had flattened. The toes spread and the nails thickened and pushed forward. The skin on top of his foot stretched until it looked slick and bruised. A fine black hair stood up along his shins like grass coming up. The next noises were all bone. Not one big snap. A lot of little ones in fast sequence. The way twigs break when someone steps off a path and into brush. Ribs shifting, sternum creaking. The joints where collarbone meets shoulder jerking, failing, grinding. He panted between each set. It sounded like a dog trying not to yelp and failing. "Stop it!" I yelled, slapping my palm against the glass so hard my skin stung. "You're hurting him!" "We're observing," the man said without looking. "Back away from the glass." Inside, Cole's eyes rolled up until I saw mostly white. The pupils were huge. Gold bled out around the edges like paint wicking into paper. He sucked air in a long, ragged drag that scraped his throat. He made a sound like, "No," or maybe it was my name. Then he backbowed so hard that the metal chair squeaked on the bolts. The straps across his chest shredded. It didn't snap outright. The holes tore one by one with little pops until the buckled end whipped and the strap went slack. His shoulders pulled forward. The line of his spine bulged in the center, and everything under his skin ripped in a fast, organized way, like muscles were crawling to new assignments. He hurled himself sideways. The strap on his right ankle held. The one on his left didn't.
The metal loop it was anchored to tore out of the chair leg with a deaf pop and flew across the room and hit the wall hard enough to ding the paint. The tech jumped back. The woman in the coat said, "Contain!" The guy beside me thumbed the M93's safety and blew a sheet of white fog through the feed port between the glass. The fog roared into the room. It hit Cole's shoulder and frost crawled over his skin in a map of white lines. His skin went from flushed to gray. Steam lifted. The smell pushed through an unseen vent, sharp chemical with a meat edge. He didn't freeze. The fog slowed him. He heaved against the chair anyway, skin cracking where it had already split. The chair skidded and tipped and slammed to the floor. He hit it with a shoulder, and the collarbone made a cracking sound like a broomstick breaking over a knee. He rolled onto his hands and feet, and I watched his elbows bend the wrong way, and the entire right way again, and then the wrong way, and then settle. The woman shouted. The chirotech blasted him again. White rime spread across his forearm and stuck the hair flat. He shook like a wet animal, and specks of ice rattled on the tile. He looked at me. He saw me. I knew he did. His eyes found mine through the glass like they were magnets in water. There was a second, just one, where something like a plea sat behind what he had become. Then a new wave took him, and it was gone. He looped one arm under the chair and flung it. It hit the glass. The whole window jolted. The wire mesh inside held. "Open foam," the man said. The ceiling in the room burped and the thick yellow foam rained down in a sheet. It splattered onto Cole's head and stuck to everything. He lashed and smacked at it and it stuck more. The foam expanded in slow bubbles, filling the space around his limbs and hardening with clicks like drying glue. He screamed in a way his throat wasn't made to anymore. The sound gutted me. His teeth were wrong now. Not neat triangles like a drawing. Uneven, crowded, some too long, some too short. Some moved places entirely. A second row was pushed at the gum line inside of his husked teeth. His lips had split at the corners. Blood made tracks down his chin and into the foam, and the foam blushed pink where it touched it. He bit the foam and his teeth sank in. He thrashed and the foam cracked along one seam. He tore a slab loose with a ripping sound and threw it aside. It hit the tile and stuck.
"More," the woman said. "More, more."
The ceiling sputtered. A few more globs fell. The rest of the nozzles coughed and died. The panel lights flickered. The siren did a single whoop again.
"Backup line's dry,"
someone said in the ceiling calmly, like talking about printer ink.
"We used it in East 2.
"Open the door,"
the woman said, fear cutting into her tone for the first time.
"No,"
the man said beside me into his mic. "Hold. He's not oriented. He's focusing on the glass." Cole gathered. There's no better word. He pulled every part of himself in and then exploded outward. He hit the glass shoulder first with his weight behind it. The window held. The frame didn't. The earlier hits had already loosened the bottom seal. The bead of sealant split. Frame screws sheared in two corners, and the wire mesh warped off center. The pane sagged into its track, found the weak angle and let go. The whole sheet tipped and fell inside and bursted into low chunks.
cold air spilled through the gap and washed over me with the smell that had followed us since the street. He came through. He cleared the metal lip with the scrape of his abdomen that left a wet line and landed on the hallway floor on all fours. He was too close to see all at once. Up close, he wasn't camera wolf or movie wolf. He was Cole ruined and rebuilt for speed and teeth. His proportions were wrong. The curve of his back was too long. His shoulders rose higher than his head. His jaw jutted with an extra hinge. The skin around his ribs had torn and healed in the same hour, and the seams wept. He stared at me. He knew me. You could tell when a thing knows you, even if it can't say your name. It's in the way the head cocks, the slow blink, the hitch in breath. He did all three. Cole, I said, and my voice cracked on it. It's me. He shook his head like the sound hurt. Behind him, through the hole, the two men he had pinned scrambled to their feet. One grabbed the other and hauled him back. The woman in the coat shouted for a vent dump of cryotherm. The guy with the M93 jammed the nozzle through the hole and fanned it like spray paint. Frost raced along the floor and spread under Cole's feet like a lace of white spiderweb. He flinched back from the fog. He jumped sideways and hit the wall with a heavy thud. The wall dented, plaster snowed.
Move!
The man beside me yelled, and I still don't know if he was yelling at me to get back or at Cole to get away from the fog. His hand came up with a little black device I had not seen him draw. It had two prongs. He fired it at Cole. The darts hit with the little clicks and a wire paid out from the thing in his hand, and the blue grid sound happened in the air. Cole convulsed. The wires snapped. He roared. There's no other word. He started low and ran out of the room in his chest and found more room anyway. The hallway ate the sound and fed it back to us. My knees went loose. Then he did something I didn't think they expected. He turned away from the hole, not towards the exit or the corner or a new target, towards me. He nosed my shoulder, fast, twice. He huffed. The air he pushed past me was hot and smelled like iron and cryochemical. He bumped me with his head, like pushing a door that wasn't open. It wasn't gentle, but it wasn't teeth. He wanted me to move. I moved. We ran. I say ran. We careened. He galloped on the pads of those wrong feet, nails exposing, scraping, catching, and releasing with the sound of a rake dragged over concrete. I sprinted where I could and half stumbled where I couldn't. Shoulder bouncing off block walls painted dingy white. The siren shrieked, and the lights serialized the hallway into flashes. Door, sign, camera dome, spill of frozen fog, red wrench on wall. Behind us, the man shouted into his mic. A rapid series of pops cracked the air, gas-fired doors sliding down their runners. One dropped a foot from my nose, and I stopped so fast my bare feet squealed on the concrete. Cole slammed the panel once with his shoulder, left a greasy patch, crouched, and leapt. He hit the edge high where the bracket met the track, and the metal groaned. He dropped and hit again, and the bracket bent and the door hung crooked.
He jammed his forelimbs under the lip, and the muscles along his back bunched up like ropes, and the door rose with a rolling bolt sound. Slow at first, then faster. He shoved his head and then his shoulders under. I slid through on my stomach, the concrete tearing thin skin from my elbows. He followed. The door dropped behind us with a crash that made dust jump. We took a left because that was the way we were facing. The hallway narrowed and the paint changed to something shinier with a thin blue stripe waist high. The door at the end had a keypad and a key reader and a sign that said Logistics in black tape letters cut with a label maker. Through the little safety glass window, I saw racks. Boxes labeled with codes. A whiteboard with S2 Beta / East Perimeter scrawled in thick Sharpie. The floor in there was clean, not gritty. A yellow line around the edge said, Keep clear, and someone had scuffed it with a toe. A Mr. Coffee Pot steamed in a metal cart. Burnt grounds crusted the spout. A man inside turned when our shadow hit the frosted window. He was mid-sip. His eyes got wide. The cup dropped and bounced and brown splattered his pant leg. He went for a drawer. We hit the door together. Me with both hands and my shoulder. Cole with everything. The frame buckled and the latch sheared with a crack.
Jesus Christ!
The man said, backing so fast he hit a shelf and rattled a line of plastic totes. Bad time to be here, I said. My voice sounded strange in my own ears. Too calm. Keys, badges, anything to make the doors open. He was shaking so hard he almost dropped his wallet. He got the badge out. It was clipped to a retractable string. Triangle through circle. H, Wyndham, printed underneath. He threw it at me. It hit my chest and fell between my feet. I bent to pick it up. When I stood, he was pulling open the drawer he had gone for. His fingers wrapped a black handle. Don't, I said. He froze. His eyes flicked at Cole, back to me. He let go of the drawer and raised both hands.
Back door, he said, voice tight. Doc, if they haven't dropped the gates.
Which way? I asked. He nodded past me. Left, left, then straight. You'll hit the big doors. Cole sniffed the air and sneezed hard enough his whole body shook. Strings flew from his mouth and hit the floor and clung. He shook his head and the skin along his jaw cracked again and bled fresh. I reached out without thinking and my hand stopped an inch from his shoulder because I didn't know if touching him would help or get me killed. He leaned into the air where my hand was, a fraction. We moved. We took left, left, and straight. The hallway grew wider and colder. It smelled like diesel and wet cardboard. Somewhere, Big reverberated with an alarm. The floor changed to ribbed rubber. Instead, suspended chains swung in tiny ticks. We hit the loading dock. It was a rectangle the size of our school gym, painted battleship gray, with three overhead doors along one wall and two black vans back to them. The vans had their rear doors open. Inside, plastic crates with latches, foil blankets, a folded gurney with straps. Men in dark gear clustered around a metal table. One of them had a hand pressed to his ear. Another was writing on a whiteboard. S2, Beta, East Perimeter, Red X3, Yellow X. There was a pot of coffee on a hot plate.
a box of donuts with two left, jellies squashed. They all turned at once.
"Fire suppress!" one shouted. "Gate! Drop the gates!"
Someone hit a button. One of the overhead doors rattled down. The other hesitated halfway and stuck, a foot of light showing under it where day leaked out. Cole bounded towards the light. Two of the guys raised their M93 canisters and hosed him. He skidded and went down, forelimbs splayed, claws scratching, ice blooming under him. He got up. His right forepaw, the hand that had not really was a hand anymore, slid sideways and he sank into one knee. He pushed up slow, teeth bared in a square grimace that had nothing human left.
"Stop!" I yelled. "If you freeze him, he'll shatter. He's..."
I don't know why I said it. It was everything and nothing. One of the men lifted his visor. He had the same older-than-30 eyes. He looked past Cole to me. He recognized me, I think. From the hall, from the window. His face did not soften.
"Kid," he said, "get on the ground."
"No," I said. "Open the door." We looked at each other over the shape in the middle of the dock that was once a person I knew. The guy with the visor frowned like he was weighing variables on a cheap scale that always tipped to his side.
"Protocol says we don't let him out," he said. "Not into the block."
"Protocol says a lot of stuff," I said. "Like paying stipends."
Something like shame flickered across his face and was gone.
"You don't want to see what happens out there," he said. "We've got the east side contained, and we don't need a red running around in the woods."
"He's not red," I said. "He stopped. He saw me. He..."
I took a step. The men tensed. Cole shifted his weight to keep me in his line. The guy's radio popped. A voice barked something fast and clipped. I only caught breach. East 2, roof. Lab foam depleted. He swore softly. He looked at me like we were on opposite sides of a door, and he knew he couldn't keep it closed, and he hated me for pushing on it anyways.
"Open it,"
he told the guy at the bottom. The guy at the bottom hesitated. The visored man rounded on him.
"If he takes three of us down, we freeze the whole bay," he snapped. "Open it, or I'll put you on a stretcher and roll you out myself."
The guy hit the button. The stuck door hiccuped, thought about it, then grounded up 2 inches at a time until there was enough space for a person to crawl under. Cold air poured in, clean in a way that hurt my nose after all the chemical. Cole went first, not fast. He ducked and slid, belly scraping the rubber. Ice cracked off him in plates. He cleared it and turned to the daylight, stunned by size and brightness like a bat in the gym. I dropped and scooted on my stomach. Hands scrambled for my ankles and got air. The rubber ribs caught my shirt and almost held me. I freed a corner and pulled. Cold hit my face like relief and pain. We were outside. Outside was the loading ramp, and an empty lane and a chain-linked fence topped with barbed wire. Beyond that, scrubby pines, brown grass, the white slice of morning on a road that looked like a dead mall should be on it. The sky was the pale color it gets just after dawn when the air hasn't warmed. My breath made a ghost in front of me. Behind us, voices yelled. The door rattled again and then shuddered and reversed. They were closing it.
Cole took three staggering steps, like getting used to gravity again. He looked at the fence, then to the space under the lip by the corner where the wire didn't meet the post flush. He put his shoulders to the mesh. It bowed and sang a low metal note. He shoved again. The post wobbled, then anchored it in a way of hurry, like a bag of quickrite that hadn't set all the way. It crumbled with a dry sound and the post kicked loose. The mesh pulled away from the bottom and sprung open. He slid under. His back scraped and left hair and skin. I followed. The wire snagged my shirt and opened it and scratched my ribs in a line. I flattened. My cuffs caught for a second. I yanked and they tore skin and I came free. Alarms wailed behind us. New, outdoor ones that made the air shake. A voice barked on a bullhorn somewhere beyond the corner of the building, words blown thin by distance and wind. Go, I said, not to anyone human anymore. Cole ran. We didn't run down the road like idiots. He cut into the brink of pines and we punched through scrub and out into the prickly gap between a half-built warehouse in a drainage ditch. The ditch moved water brown and slow. A culvert the size of a car tire dumped into it from under across the road. The black mouth of it sank like algae and rust and something else I couldn't place. Cole went through the culvert without looking back. He dropped and slid it on his belly. For a second, his hips got stuck, and I just saw the spread of his back legs, stringers standing out. Then he flexed, and he was gone. I went in after him because, of course I did. The pipe scraped my shoulders. Water hit my chest cold enough to shock a yelp out of me. The floor was slimy. My palms skidded and caught on grit. The world turned to corrugation and stink and the thunder of my own breath. Somewhere behind us, heavy boots hit gravel. The bullhorn voice got closer and more clipped. Halt! Show hands! Do not! And then there was only the echo around the word not. We crawled until the light behind us was a coin. We crawled until the pipe took a shallow bend and the coin disappeared and the dark was total. We crawled until the water got deeper and the smell got sharper and my knees felt flayed. Then the pipe widened into a junction and there was a gray circle of light to the left. Cole's bulk shoved past me. He shouldered at the thinner of the two mesh grates and it bent and popped, and he spilled out into a narrower ditch, scrambling up a slope of cold mud and vanished into a screen of switchgrass. I wiggled through the gap he had left, hauled myself up with handfuls of dead weed, and rolled onto my back in the grass and stared at the sky that looked like a blank sheet. We didn't stop. We moved under the cover of weed and scrub along the back side of the warehouses and the stubbled field beyond them. Every time my lungs ran out, Cole slowed like he felt it through the ground and waited with his head low and his breath harsh. He did not turn to check. He tilted his head like listening. When I could stand it again, we went. We heard the helicopter twice. Once far, once almost over us. The rotors beat the air in square pieces that ran over my skin. We froze and the switchgrass shook with it. A searchlight swung and washed a white bar over the weeds and kept going. We crossed a rail cut with gravel the size of eggs. We crossed a lot that used to be lumberyard and still smelled like wet pine where the ground is never dry. We passed a billboard on steel legs advertising a fireworks store that isn't even there anymore. Buy one, get one all year! Someone had spray painted a triangle with a slash through the circle over the fireworks. By the time the sun was properly up, we were deep in a stand of thin trees that rattled with dead leaves and had a carpet of needles that muffled the ground. The kind of trees where you could still hear the road if you stopped breathing, but not well enough to tell which way it was. We stopped at a little dip with bracken, the kind of place deer bed in. The earth smelled clean. There, in a way that almost wiped the memory of the facility out of my nose. Almost. Cole crouched. He panted. His eyes sawed. He shut his eyes like the light hurt. Without the sirens and the yelling and the cold lights, he looked more like a dog with a sickness and less like a monster, except for the parts of him that were still wrong. The swell over his jaw, the extra hinge, the line where the skin had split and sealed and split again, the nails that had become weapons he couldn't retract. He opened his eyes and flicked them to me. "Can you understand me?" I asked. My voice felt like it could break if I pushed it wrong. He blinked slow. The gold in his irises were bright now, threaded like veins in stone. He made a small sound, not words, but not just noise. He lifted his head and put it close to my shoulder. He didn't touch my skin. He breathed me in and out like checking inventory. Then he withdrew and set his head on his forelimbs and closed his eyes again. I watched his chest for a long time to make sure it was moving. We stayed there until my feet hurt too much to think and my brain finally let me have a few blank minutes. When the blankness ended, the questions came in a rush as ugly as anything from that night. Where do we go? How far did the perimeter around Maple Crescent reach? What did the scanner see when it looked at me now? If someone pointed one at me in this ditch, would I be yellow still? What happens when yellow turned red? Could it turn back? Had anyone made it back? If we made it out of the trees and not into another perimeter, then what? A bus station? Where? To whom? Who would look at us and not slam a door or call the same men who strapped my friend to the chair? A branch cracked in the trees behind us. Small, not boot weight. Squirrel or bird. My body tensed anyways because the part that deals with sound is still upside down from alarms and screams. Cole's head came up like it had been on a spring. He turned it towards the sound. His ears gathered the space like satellite dishes. His lips peeled away from teeth. I crouched closer on instinct. He turned a face towards me. He didn't bare his teeth at me. His eyes flattened like the water in them had gone still. I put my hand out. This time I didn't stop an inch short. I put my palm on the warm, rough ridge where his shoulders met his neck. His hair was coarse and damp. The skin under it was as hot as a fever. "It's me," I said. "You held on." He made a low sound that wasn't a growl. It vibrated under my hand like a phone on a table. His breathing slowed a notch. The branch cracked again. This time it came with a whisper like a jacket. A voice followed, soft, trying to be nothing. "Kid?" We went still like pictures. The whisper came again from the trees.
Evan?
It was the tired-eyed man in the gear. The one who had hit the red switch. He stepped into the bracket with his hands half up and empty. He didn't have the M93 in them. He also didn't have his visor on. He looked smaller without it and more dangerous, because it meant he thought he didn't need to hide.
"Don't run," he said.
Behind him, I heard faint, the weight of another person shifting on needles. Two, no more than three. They hung back where the trees were thicker.
"You open that door," I said. "You don't get to sneak up like this."
"I didn't sneak," he said. "I walked. You heard me. Thought that was the point."
He glanced at Cole. Not a flinch. Not the wide-eyed recoil you see when a person sees their first corpse. He cataloged Cole the way he cataloged equipment, quietly, with an overlay of regret. "He's not red," I said.
"No," he agreed. "Not for lack of trying on our end."
"Don't do the jokes," I said, heat rising. "Not now." He spread his hands a little. His palms were chapped. His thumbnail had a dirty half moon.
"I'm not even here to haul you back," he said.
"No," I said, "because your job description
is complicated," he said.
He crouched slowly, wincing at his knee, and sat on his heels so he wasn't towering over us. He smelled like stale coffee and the Cairo chemical and old sweat.
"You dragged him through a lot of our doors. That took guts and poor judgment.
Both." "You shot him," I said.
"We slowed him," he said.
"He was screaming."
"I heard," he said flat.
We looked at each other and thought about the glass and the foam and the cracks up the wall. I thought about Mrs. Harding on the hallway floor and the little crescents Cole's nails had left in his drywall when he panicked. I thought about the clinic line and the silver case.
"What now?" I asked.
He reached into his vest slowly and pulled out something that looked like a garage clicker. He thumbed it, and the little light on it flipped from green to red and stayed red.
"The scanner doesn't ping you as yellow right now," he said. "That's either good or very bad. Means you're either clean or you don't show up when you should."
"What about him?" I asked, nodding at Cole.
"Red," he said. "But he's tethered, which we don't have a language for."
"What does that mean?"
"Means you exist to him," he said. "That's keeping you alive."
Cole was breathing through his open mouth and fogged the air. The tip of one of his longer teeth had a thin chip missing.
"I didn't know when that had happened. I didn't know if it could heal." "You could walk away," the man said, looking at me. "If you can get past the second fence, we'll have to report your direction, but we won't chase you through every tree. We have our hands full. A lot of reds in the block. Some yellows turning."
"Or?" I asked.
"Or you could stay long enough to hear the part I'm not supposed to say," he said.
I kept my hand on Cole's shoulder.
"I didn't think it did anything real. It was a talisman. A thing to fill the space where my brain kept making lists of exit routes."
"Say it," I said.
"Some of us don't like the way this is going," he said, watching me, not the trees. "We signed on for containment and cleanup. We didn't sign on for paying people to keep sick kids in a district where we wait for scanners to ping. That wasn't the charter." He paused. "Containment, not bounties.
I won't be that guy.
Then why do it? I asked.
I don't get to write the checks, he said. I get to show up with the canister when they call. That's what my job is now.
You could walk, I said. He smiled like I'd given the right answer to a question two classes up.
Maybe, he said. Or I could stand in this strip of trees and tell you not to go north because there's a secondary line going up by the highway in about an hour, and not to go past east because they'll grid it with drones before noon. And I could hand you a bag that opens doors we didn't shut right if you wanted to try your luck.
He reached into his vest again. He pulled out a badge clipped to a retractable string and tossed it to me like a guy tossing a pack of gum to a friend. It hit my palm and stung. The plastic was warm from his body. B. Sloan, it said under the symbol. The clip had a notch worn smooth with use.
You're helping us, I said.
I'm helping you not die badly in a ditch, he said. The difference feels academic on nights like this.
I put the badge into my pocket because there wasn't anywhere else. My cuffs had rubbed my wrists raw, and the skin stung where the plastic edge touched it.
What happens when this stops? I said, pointing towards the sky and the block in our town inside the square on some division map. What happens to people like him?
We say there aren't any, he said.
We breathed.
The pines knocked their tops together like cheap shutters.
You are not going to chase us, I said.
I'm going to walk that way, he said, nodding left.
And talk too loud about the orders so the guys I brought can relax their trigger fingers. You're going to sit here 10 minutes so it doesn't look like I gave you a head start. Then you're going to slip behind the drainage berm and cut west. There's a chain under the fence behind you, the old solar array that we didn't get bolted right. If you're quiet, you could get through before they notice the camera's dead.
Who killed the camera? I asked.
He stood. The knees of his pants were wet with leaves that stuck to them.
Some raccoon with an attitude, he said.
He turned and moved through the scrub. He didn't look back. The trees swallowed him, and the whisper underbrush noise of the other two with him, and the smell of the crypto chemical.
Cole watched him go.
He shifted like something in him wanted to follow and something else made him stay.
We're moving, I told him when my 10 minutes were up. I don't know where. He pushed up. He shook once, slow, like testing the way his new joints worked when they weren't trying to kill him. His head came to my shoulder again and rested there for one long breath that hurt all the way down to the bottom ribs. Then he stepped away and I followed, and we left a shallow trench in the needles that would fill back in as if we were never there. We found the berm. We found the solar array with panels dusted white with pollen. We found the fence with the chain looped wrong through the links. I used the badge on the post box that someone had bothered to wire and checked a gate open to the access road. We walked under the panels where the weeds grew thin, and the ground was cool and the shade broke into footprints. On the other side, noise. Not sirens. Life. A distant truck. A bird that wasn't a crow. A plane that was just a plane. The world sounded like it was trying to be normal for everyone who didn't live on Maple Crescent. We stepped into it. He limped on his right side. I tucked my hand against his shoulder and matched the rhythm he could keep.
We stayed in the scrub when we could and along fences when we couldn't. We drank from a hose on the side of the warehouse, and I didn't care if it tasted metallic. He lapped from a puddle with his head low and didn't look proud. We cut into a strip of pines behind a retaining wall and crouched. An empty sports bottle laid half-crushed near a pallet stack. I rinsed it with the hose, filled it, and carried it into the trees. "Hold still," I said. He didn't, not really, but he lowered his head. The spit in the corner of his mouth was open, foam residue stuck in the crack. I poured slow as the water slid along his lips instead of hitting his teeth. He flinched hard, a short whine through his nose, but let me keep going. The runoff turned pink, then clearer. The chemical taste sat bitter on my fingers. I tore the cleanest strip from the bottom of my shirt, folded it, and pressed it to the split. "Your mom would tell me to do this right," I said. "She had a whole bin of first aid stuff." Saina pulled something heavy across my chest. He went very still. His eyes closed once, slow. He breathed out and it shook. I wrapped the strip under his jaw and up over the crown of his head, not above one ear. It looked dumb, but it held. Up close, the back molars and hairline cracks. One canine still had that chip. The skin along his jaw was hot and tight. "We need tape, ointment, anything," I said. "Mostly to keep my hands working." I rinsed the dried blood off his paws, too. The pads were torn and slick. He kept his mouth shut while I did, muscles jumping. "I'm sorry about your mom," I said quietly. No better words existed. He bumped his head into my shoulder once, hard and brief, then pulled away. He licked at the bandage. It darkened but didn't soak through. His breathing evened a notch. I capped the bottle, stuffed the leftover cloth into my pocket, and we moved. When the sun got meaner, we crawled under a deadfall and rested. When it slid down again, we moved. By the time it got dark the second time, we were miles from the triangle on his badge and the block that used to be my whole world. I didn't know where we were headed. I only knew that we weren't going towards any place the division wanted us, and that had to be the plan for now. We slept in bursts. In the middle of one, he made a small noise and his legs jerked like he was running in a dream. I pressed my palm to his side. His ribs ticked under it. His heart felt fast and off pace, like a drummer who had missed the count and kept going. I kept seeing his hand on the chair, the nail lifting, the line of blood. I kept hearing his jaw pop. If I ever thought about being like him, strong, fast, unbreakable, those sounds burned that right out of me. It wasn't strength. It was a body forced into a shape it didn't want, inch by inch, with every inch painful. It was teeth grinding and skin tearing and something inside shouting until the throat ran out. No one would want to hear it up close. The wind shifted around midnight. It brought me the smell of water and old wood and the sharp green breath of something growing that hadn't been cut back yet. It brought me a thinner edge of diesel, a highway maybe. It brought me the faint smear of smoke that wasn't the chemical kind, but somebody's fire. He stirred and lifted his head and tasted the air. He pushed his nose into my jacket, like making sure that I was still there, and then turned towards the dark. "Okay," I whispered.
Let's go find out what's left.
We moved again, quiet under the pines, under the sky that had not once looked down and said a word about any of this. When the rotors came back, hours later, far off and low, we both heard them. We paused and counted the beats and the way they echoed off nothing. He tensed and then let it go. We kept moving north of west. The trees thinned, the ditch widened, the night cracked open with a stretch of field and beyond it, a line of lights that didn't blink in time with any alarm I knew. There would be more doors. There would be more badges. There would be towns that weren't ours and people who wouldn't look at us straight. There would be questions I didn't know the shape of yet and truths that needed said out loud to someone who could do anything with them. But there would also be places where the only sound was wind and dry grass, and a bird I couldn't name, and the quiet breathing of the person I dragged through this, who had dragged me right back. We walked into that, and for a little while, there weren't any sirens at all.